just to repeat what one of the things Rav Johnny mentioned before, I think flows in perfectly to sort of Orleans shear now, is the connection of Yom Kippur to after Yom Kippur. So Johnny mentioned that part of the idea of after somebody comes out of the mikvah, so the halacha about the woman who comes out should not look at something improper immediately afterwards. She should be looking at something tahor or kodesh immediately after she comes out of the mikvah. So too on Yom Kippur, once we come out, our thoughts and our things that we look at after Yom Kippur should also be tahor and positive, etc., etc. So that, of course, is one of the reasons, this is mentioned by the poskim, why immediately after Yom Kippur we're supposed to start our preparations for sukkahs, which are building a sukkah and procuring arba minim. So it's a perfect opportunity. It's already to get the satan now before he comes at us after Yom Kippur. They already start talking about the halachas of one of the important mitzvahs of sukkahs, which is arba minim. In past years here, we've had a few shurim on the building of sukkah, on sukkah halachas. Rav Orlin, I think, gave one. I gave one on pergolas a couple years ago. I'll post them on the website also with the links if you want to hear them. But I don't think we've had one on arba minim in the last couple of years. The only disadvantage of doing it now is that we don't have show and tell, unfortunately. But at least hopefully we'll have some basis for how to go about finding good arba minim.
In person, Mechvod Aksanya, thank you, Kevin, for hosting the shiur. I thank you, Aveli, for organizing it. We'd like to spend a few minutes discussing the various halachas of arba minim. Many of them, it's not the first time you're buying arba minim. We've done this already for years. So many of the halachas, certainly the basic halachas, you're already familiar with. Nonetheless, Ein Beis Medrash Velo Chiddush, there are certain points to clarify, certain new points, certain points that may have been forgotten. So we'll go over the halachas, and hopefully everybody will find some new point or new points that they will enable them to properly choose the arba minim. We're going to do something interesting today. Rather than usually you start Esrog Lulav Hadas Narava, since you can spend a long time in Esrog, you barely get down to Hadas Narava. Mm-hmm. So it could be equal opportunity. So we're going to start, we're going to do it backwards. Okay? We'll start from Narava, go to Hadas Lulav, and whatever time is left for the Esrog. Okay? I just like to mention two Sfarim that I have here. One called Pri Hadar by somebody from Margolis. I believe here is also in English. Okay, I think this is right.
That's from Margolin.
Margolin, right. Hadar Margolin. He's also in England, in English. He lives in Harnof. And have also in English. He even has some English in the Sefer. Even, yeah. even in the Hebrew version, he has some English. Okay, so a person wants to have a useful Sefer. And actually, what I copied today is he has an introduction. He has a very brief review of the halachas of the arba minim. So this is basically a photocopy from his introduction. I'm assuming that this hopefully this serves as a promotion for his sefer. doesn't mind that I'm photocopying these couple of pages. Okay, arava. Let us begin basically with the arava. There are a couple of points that need to be dealt with arava. Number one is most critical is who you buy it from. Okay. There are two issues. Number one, to make sure that it's truly an arava. There are trees that are something similar. There's another tree which is very similar to the arava, and you want to make sure this is a genuine arava and not a fake arava. And the person who you're buying it from can assure you that this is a true arava tree. All right, there are certain simanim which are generally indicative, whether the leaves are elongated or round, are they jagged. I listened to a shiur by Rabbi Miller on the way back, and he pointed out tree, the leaves tend to get more jagged when it's lacking water. So when the leaf is fresh, the leaf will be smooth. As you get towards the summer and the tree gets less and less water, it tends to get more and more jagged. So we're not, so it's the same tree, and it's the same leaf. It's just it's a simon, it's not a siba. So as long as you're aware that the tree, in principle, is a tree which is smoothly the proper arava tree, then it's okay. So it's good to make sure the person you're getting it from is giving a genuine arava. The other issue is to be careful that it's not a gezula, it shouldn't be stolen. If it's someone who has the authority to sell, buying from children can be an issue, especially the first day, if they're not bar mitzvah or just barely bar mitzvah, can be an issue. And therefore, again, you have to make sure that are they just serving as Are they just standing at the? Are they just standing? Is it really, are they the ones who cut it and they're the ones who are selling it, or are they just standing there, you know, collecting the money and watching that nobody takes from on behalf of their parents, or the cutting was done or by an older sibling or by a parent, and they're just standing there manning the stand, but the sale is actually from the adult to you. Right. So it's just a, what?
Can we like nowadays, robbers, you get at least
right. So you just have to make sure. You just have to. So, all right. Well, once you pass the first day, it's less of an issue. The issue is primarily the first day, because then it has to be yours, me, the oraisa. And then once you pass the first day, it's less of an issue. Nowadays, a lot of them will sell in plastic bags. If you want to spend 5 shekel, you can spend 5 shekel and get. If not, you can go to one of the neighbors. There are numerous people around. Enough people around
the
issue.
We have neighbors
that allow
their
arrows to be cut down. So if you want to save yourself 5 shekel, find the neighbor who has. You don't want to, you're the kind of person who wants to know you have it 3 weeks before. No, not 3 weeks, but you want to know you have it ahead of time so you can spend 5 shekel and get a thing of arrows. The other thing, which is during the course of Yom Tov, since the arrows are not that expensive and they're relatively readily available, although there is a psul, if the arava becomes dried, it becomes pasul. Dried means to the point that it will crumble, depending on how you kept your haravos during the course of the, since they're the thinnest leaf, they tend to dry out more quickly than the other leaves. It's a good idea to replace your haravos once or twice or three times, depending on how you keep your arava during the course of the sukkahs. If you keep it moist, wrapped up in a towel and something, you can usually get through most of the days. Towards the end, you may want to get a fresh one. If you don't keep it as carefully, you may want to replace it more frequently, depending on the readily available of the, you know, if your neighbor has. Just make sure you leave some for Hoshanas. But otherwise, so that's basically in terms of Arava. There are not that many halachas to be discussed. Just to make sure that the one thing which is important, thank you, is that that end can't be snipped off. Okay, Niktar Mosh, that's why you can't take one long Arava branch and go snip, 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 snip. It has to be the end of the branch. It has to be a branch which was not cut at the top. So from each branch, that's why those who have ever grown aravas, you know that towards, you know, about a month or so before Sukkot, you want to prune it, because every time you prune it, you get two or four, every time you cut off the branch, then two or four of the buds start branching out and growing. So you can't just take one long, go snip, 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 but rather you have to take the end of the branch. And that leads to what some farmers say with a lavluv. Lavluv is a leaf at the end, which a fresh, delicate leaf at the end, you can clearly see that it wasn't cut, whereas without the lav, without the fresh leaf, sometimes it looks, the way that rubber grows, it looks sometimes like a faint, almost like it's been cut there, very, very thin. It's not necessarily at all. So, usually if it's cut, it's thicker, right? But the very thin ending is just the way it grows. The one downside of the lav is that since it's very faint and delicate, it will usually dry much more quickly. Okay. Any questions? Because the question is probably the best way to deal with it. Okay. Anyone has questions? Feel free to ask, and we'll try to answer. Okay, Hadas. Okay, Hadas. What? Yeah. Okay. How many of these can fall off? So it becomes possible if most of the leaves fell off. Okay, I'm not sure what you wrap it in. I don't have much experience. I'll just tell you what I do, and I find everybody has their own secret of how to keep the arava reading. Okay, maybe we should just go around the table and share our secrets. What I've been doing, my father does, and I've been doing for many years, and I find it works quite well, is I put the hadas and the aravas in the koshikla before yantif. And I wrap it, and I wrap it up in a slightly moist towel, because sometimes you don't want a very moist towel, just a slightly moist towel in the refrigerator, and I take it to shul that way. Before the arba minim, I stick the lulav into the koshikla, and after uz, I take it out and wrap it up back in the towel, and when I get home, put it back in the fridge. I find I can usually get through even Sundays the whole chag that way, and certainly having to change once maximum twice, even the lovin Even the Hoshanos last quite well in that manner. Ravelli, any, Johnny, any? Okay.
Well, just the color is the only other thing that you may want to mention, the green, of how much green has to be taken, lost before it's pustle. He mentioned it here, but you didn't
okay, so fill in, in terms of...
just the green doesn't necessarily mean, I guess, green. Green means, like, color. Meaning
yellowish.
Right, yeah, okay. Even if it's... the portion is still greenish, it's probably still kosher, just if all the colors are gone,
right,
yeah.
Right. So then it's completely white or black, that's for you again for pasta.
And again, the majority of leaves, same thing.
So the main thing is just try to keep it wrapped up in something moist in the fridge, and then if it does get dried out, it's usually pretty available, and you can replace it. All right, the hadassim, there used to be whole discussions about the hadassim, things have changed, right? Very few people buy individual hadassim nowadays. Usually buy them prepackaged. Okay? It's a question whether you want to spend 35 or 30 or 25 or 20 or 15 or whatever. What is the basic difference? There are three or four factors in terms of determining the price of the hadassah. Number one is how big. The hadass has to be the shear of 3 tefachim. Okay? 3 tefachim, depending on whether you take the larger shear of the chazanish or the lesser shear of the Chaim Noah, will either be close to 30 centimeters, about a foot, or about 22 centimeters, something about 8 inches or so. Okay, so you'll find that some will say, you know, the packages, some will be mishulash, right? Because we know the hadas has to have 3 leaves coming out of the same, on the stem, 3 leaves coming out of the same point on the base. Okay, so as usually at the top, it's more common. As it gets further down, it begins to start spreading apart. So the top, this much is almost everything is, by definition, almost always mishulash. As you get down, most of them are mishulash. As you get further down, it's most of mishulash. As you get further down, this is where it begins to start being yes or being no. Okay, so some will be mishulash, the full length of the chazanish. The bigger shul will be, let's, for example, about 30 centimeters, will continue to be mishulash. And some will be mishulash only according to the shortest shear of the Chaim Noah, about 22, 24 centimeters, and won't hit the 30 mark. So that's the first issue. The second issue is whether you want to have meikra din. Many poskim assume that you can have rov mishulash. Okay, even if it doesn't reach, even if it takes the chazanish, it doesn't do the full 30. It's enough to be 15, 16 centimeters. According to Rav Chaim Noah, if we said 22, it's enough to be 12 centimeters. So some will be mishulash the full length, and some will be mishulash rove of the length. The third factor is, and this is similar to the gradations, then there are two other factors which affect the gradations. One, the thickness of the hadassim. Okay, how thick the hadassim are, how thick the leaves are. And the thicker the leaves, the nicer it is. Again, let's say here that's not a halakhic requirement. Okay, it's just if you pick up a package, you look and you'll see, if you may compare two packages in front of you, what are you looking for? Okay, other than the price of the length. Sometimes you'll see some hadassim are, one brand may have a thicker kind of stem, or one brand may have a thinner kind of stem. The thicker stem will probably last longer fresh. Okay, so again, if you're the person who keeps them well, it doesn't make a difference. If the person who tends to just leave them out and get dried out, then you'd be better off getting one with a thicker branch and thicker leaves. The other final issue, which is again a little bit hard to tell outside, but it may depend on the gradation of the aleph, 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 and aleph, aleph, and aleph. When you talk about mishulash, so if you look at the way my fingers are now, they're pretty much all starting from the same point. You can have a situation where a leaf is starting, let's say, like this. Now, it's not exactly at the same level. One's slightly higher than the other. All right, so there, a question, as long as there, you can, as long as you can draw a line because the stem has a certain thickness to it. All right, so if you have one stem is here, one stem's above it, that not, will not be considered a shulash, but if it's overlapping, then it would be considered. So some are ideally perfectly in line, and some are slightly off, not in a perfect circle, but they're slightly off. Okay, so that's something which has to do with the price. All right, so this is something which, since I said nowadays, people don't pick their individual hadas, but just buy a... so you decide whether you want to try to get the most mahudar, full length, you know, Meshulash completely according to the Chazon Ish, and the thickest branch is going to cost you probably 40, 45, something like that. You want to get a thinner one, you want to get a smaller one, you can get down. So again, each person according to his budget. What I could say is that since many people buy not only for themselves, but also for the children, not bar mitzvah, so one could make the distinction that perhaps for yourself, okay, you want to spend a little bit more money and get a hadas, which is meshulash, according to a larger shear, and for the children, you can suffice with a smaller shear hadas, which would be so much cheaper. That's, I think, a fair kind of shara for many of the people here. Okay?
Sticking
hadas in the kosher. Sticking hadas in the kosher, again, since if you rip off the leaves of the hadas, you're again, you run the risk of losing leaves, and again, it comes into questions how many leaves can come off. Is it mishulash, not mishulash? When sticking the leaves in, you have to try to do it gently, and as much as possible, don't pull it out. You stick the hadas in the koishlach the first time, and you leave it there for sukkahs. If you do need to pull it out and adjust it, you don't pull it out the top. You very, very gently feed it out through the bottom. Okay? Because the way the leaves are, once a leaf is going to get, if you pull it up, it's going to get caught and the leaf is going to get ripped off. The only way to pull out a properly leaf, if you need to adjust it, is to gently, one at a time, pull the hadasim out, or same with karavos. Gently pull one strand out at a time through the bottom, and that way the leaves will pretty much remain intact. As I said, the way I do it by just keeping the whole koshalach, taking out the whole koshalach and putting it in the wrapping up in the towel, I don't have to take it all in and out because it's just the whole koshalach with the hadasim and the aravos is all put there together, wrapped up, put in the fridge, put back on, slipped off as a whole unit. Don't have to get involved at all in this. The other thing just to mention when we're talking about hadas and aravos is that the hadas is supposed to be, as you know, slightly higher than the arava. Okay, that's the way we generally do it. The hadas on the right, the aravos on the left, and the hadas slightly higher. Now again, the aravos, we're looking at the stem. The arava, a lot of times, has a long leaf that can go up. We're looking at the stem. At the top of the stem of the hadas should be slightly higher than the top of the stem of the arava. Okay, one final point on this, if we're talking about the placement, ideally the top, the hadas, should be a tefach lower than the top leaf. Okay, meaning that if you have the lulav has the leaves coming off, branching off, and the last leaf, let's say if this is your lulav, okay, the last branch, let's say for example, branches off over here. Okay, if these branching off, tensing off, you have two, and the last one comes off over here. Ideally, the hadas should be a tefach underneath this line. Not a tefach from the tip, not a tefach from the top, but a tefach from where the last leaf went off. Okay, so if you have a long lulav, it's not such an issue. Okay, if you have a shorter lulav, then it's a little more of an issue, but usually there's enough room, just pull the koshalach a little bit down, and you also don't need something to give you a hadas, which is this big. This big, according to everybody, you don't need such a big arava or such a big hadas. Right? 30 is the maximum, okay, that you could need, and if you find that your lulav is a little bit short and you can't get it that low, so you can just either pull the koshalach down, pull the hadas and arava down, shorten them a little bit. But ideally, the top of the hadas should be a tefach below where the last leaf comes off. Okay, I've seen some many chashi rabbanim who are not makpid on this, and the hadasim will go up beyond that point. But that is the ideal way to place the hadas. Okay. Any questions? No. Okay. Really, any additions? Okay. Okay, moving backwards to lulav. Okay, lulav. Sfardim have it easy. Okay, why does Sfardim have it easy? Because the Gemara, what's one of the most common psulim is what we call nechaka hatiyomes, where the leaves split apart. To understand the machaber, the Shulchan Aruch, which many Sfardim, at least the maker, I didn't follow, is that means that if most of the leaves are split, then the lulav is pasul. Very rarely do you have a situation where most of the leaves of the lulav are split. However, in the Ramah understands that tiomis is just the single topmost leaf, and therefore if the single topmost leaf is split, the lulav can be pasul even if all the other 99 leaves are perfectly intact. The question is there, and therefore one of the main things that you're looking for in a lulav is that the top be as closed as can be. Why do I say as closed as can be? Because completely closed lulavim are approximately four in a box. Okay? So if you want to go through, if you don't mind sitting there at the box and going through every lulav and look for the perfectly closed lulav, you can find them. I just need a little bit of patience and just be very, very delicate and careful that you don't ruin the seller's merchandise. But if you look at it, about four or five to a box, if you want to go through it carefully, they're clicked to be completely closed. We usually assume the halacha is that lemaisa is that there are different opinions. The ikra did is that the leaf should be not, and it also can happen during, even if you got one which was perfectly closed or almost perfectly closed, when you have one kid to jab it in the ceiling, okay, or to jab it into a thing, or if you yourself to do it, or it can fall and it can start splitting apart. As long as the leaf is not mostly split, it's still okay. So you have to look at the top leaf, and even if it starts to, even if the top leaf is starting to split apart, but if this is the length of the leaf and the majority of the leaf is still intact, then it's kosher. All right. Some suggest up to a tefach. Some suggest, as I said, the equal is majority, and some try to make sure it's as little as possible. To the extent that it's kosher and it starts coming apart, you are allowed to take a little bit of glue and glue the leaf together so it doesn't spread apart more. If you have a leaf that's already split apart more than half and it's pasul, you can't, all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put this lulav that together again. Okay? But to the extent that the lulav is still kosher and you're afraid that as you shake it, as chag goes on, it's going to get more and more apart, you can take a tiny, tiny drop of glue and just take those two leaves, not on Yom Tif obviously, and glue the two leaves together to make sure that it stays intact as it is and won't spread farther apart. Okay? So that's the main thing when looking for a lulav, is that the top is not significantly split. The more the more closed it is, the better. What else? Ideally, a lulav should be nice and thick and straight and not curved. Most of the things will not you have puzzle. The only other thing which is important, which is a potential pull that you have to look for, is it says if the top is four, sometimes you have two top leaves, two tiomases, and the leaves fork apart. If the leaves fork apart, not just next together, but they fork apart in a noticeable manner, that's called kihimnik, and that's like a pitchfork, that would be a psul in the lulav. So if the top leaves, even if the two top leaves, each leaf is closed, but you have a kind of a pitchfork effect, okay, that I'll show you here. Okay, here you can perhaps see the picture, if you can see it, but you see here, this passes around here. See, this is split apart, almost like a pitchfork. The two leaves are broken apart in a kind of a noticeable, in a noticeable manner. So that's that is something also to be careful of when looking for a lulav. Okay. Okay, and of course, again, the lulav shouldn't be cut at the top. Shouldn't be the same way the hadas and the arava can't be cut at the top. So, too, the lulav can't be snipped off at the top. But
it sounds like it's better to get a lulav that doesn't make any noise when you shake it.
So this takes us back to this goes to a question of do you want a lulav which is, you know, British soldier, standing at, you know, amod noach or amod dom. Sometimes you get a lulav which is stuck together and doesn't shake too much, and leaves are going to stay together. Sometimes you have the top covered, okay, which pretty much usually in the case it would be together. On the other hand, there is an ideal of being able to shake being able to shake. Sometimes you could, what you can do is very, very gently. You can slowly peel apart, even if you get a little bit stuck together, and therefore the top leaves are going to be together, you can very, very gently peel off, you know, as you get, you know, don't touch the top leaves too much, okay? But as you do the sides, you can gently, very gently peel them off, so that when you shake it, it will shake a little bit, right? Sometimes they have a very long, on the top of the lulav, almost like a long string. I don't know what you call that. You call it a coat. So the poskim. I don't think that it looks. It's not part of the leaf proper. It's, I guess, an extension of the leaf.
Brown stuff.
What?
The brown stuff.
Not the brown stuff. No, not the brown stuff. I've seen them one the love. I've seen it more recently. Love him. That not the brown stuff, but there's a very almost something that can be like this long at the top of the leaf. Something on one side of the leaf to be like this very, very long, thin spike, which I think is generally not considered part of the leaf upper, and therefore, if that gets cut, I don't think that would be a problem. Okay? Fine. Alright, moving on to esrog. Alright, just tell me how much, 10, 15. What do you want to give it? Okay. All right, esrog. All right. When you get an esrog, you'll suddenly have the heksher, the bedatz heksher, this heksher, that other. What is the heksher? First of all, the heksher usually does not mean that it's kosher. All right. The heksher means that it's that shumas mice were taken, and that it's taken from a grove, which is assumed to be a true esrog grove, and not from a grove which was murkav, which was grafted. Okay, the poskim generally don't accept the esrog which is grafted. How do we know if the esrog tree wasn't grafted? So if it's recently grafted, we could be on top of it. What happened 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago? We don't know. We assume that there were less, probably a little less into grafting then. And there's certain esrogim that have a greater, we know that Gdolim used it, so for various reasons we assume that they have a chazaka, so that has proliferated. We try to get trees from those groves. So the hechsherim on the esrog box is basically indicating there are two kinds of hechsherim, I should say. The general hechsherim on an extra box, an esrog box is saying that A, it's edible, i.e. truma samas were taken, and B, it comes from a grove which is assumed to be esrog grove. The kashas of the particular esrog is usually not included unless it specifically says that this esrog was checked by whatever the bez did, whatever, then there may be kasha on the particular esrog. But the standard box that you just buy anywhere, the heksher of the bedatz or the heksher of whatever it is usually not going to be on the particular esrog. Therefore, you have to take the esrog and check it that this particular one is also kosher. All right, what makes an esrog kosher? Okay, let's just mention a few things that are ideal and a few things that are problematic. Okay, the main thing which is ideal at esrog is that it should be relatively clean. Clean meaning that there should be as few spots as possible. Black spots are the nemesis of esrogim. Okay, an esrog which has, especially on the top port, the esrog has a point at which it begins to, the top part of the esrog begins to begin to shape in. This is called the chotam. And a black spot which is noticeable, emphasize that word, anywhere on the top part of the esrog will pasul the esrog. What does noticeable mean? So it says the poskim right, they have a picture here, as you would typically hold it, right? Kederach achizasa, where is okay, have your picture. Obviously, if you take the esrog and you look at here, and especially if you take off your glasses and you're like this, or you take out your, you know, and you take out your handy dandy magnifying glass, okay, you will even find the particular dot, which is smack in the middle of the shin. Okay, we're not looking at that. Certainly not as far as psil, but certainly if you take the esrog with your glasses, if you can't see without glasses, obviously. Okay, if you're holding the esrog in a classical way, the way a person, you know, would typically hold the esrog. When you do the mitzvah, you have the esrog, and you would be able to notice the spot at the, you know, understand the conditions. That would be a kind of psil that would invalidate the esrog. Okay, so a person has a shayla. If it's a small spot, it will probably not be so noticeable. If it's a larger spot, it could pasul the esrog. On the lower part of the esrog, individual spot will not. But if you have a few spots scattered around a few places, then it could possibly, wherever you turn it, you still can't get rid of those spot on the wall. You just can't get rid of that spot. Right? No matter how you turn it, if you can turn it around and from this side, all the spots are out of view, then you're okay. But if no matter how you turn it, you just can't get rid of the spots and the spot, then the esog would be puzzle on the bottom as well. Okay, but again, this is important to mention that these are spots that are noticeable from a typical distance by regular eyesight. A person has a question, come and ask a shayla.
How can they come off that?
What?
To make sure that they don't. A lot of the spots come off. If you don't hard, if you brush it very gently, you'll find a lot of it is just dirt. So before you run, you know, get all scared, you try gently to brush off the spots first. If they come off easily, it was just dirt.
Okay.
If it doesn't come off easily, then that's when you have the shayla.
Okay. There are a lot of the esogim have. I know this is we're talking about a black spot. There are white spots too, but I think a little bit less common. There was sometimes more like a tannish, brownish kind of spot, which is more typical for the esrog. That's not considered. That's more typical. That would not possible. It's not as mudar, but that would not possible it. A lot of the esrogim have scratches on them, cream scratches. Basically, the esrog got scratched by a thorn. Esrog trees, I don't know how to see an esrog tree, knows that esrogim trees have many, many thorns on them. And therefore, the esrogim, a lot of times, will get a scratch from the thorn, and will get a cream kind of scab. Scar to show that doesn't possible, but again, if it's a very large one, depending on the size and the placement, it can remove lower the hider. Okay. Another thing which also can pass on esrog is if something is missing, something gouged a hole in it, and part of the esrog is missing. Okay, now the esrog has a couple of layers of peel, the color coating. Has the outermost almost almost of negligible width. Okay, sometimes it's just the coloring peel gets scraped off. That's not considered a chaser, but if it starts going into the flesh itself, that would be a problem of chaser. And on the first day, what?
The peel or the flesh of the fruit?
No, not the fruit. Oh, well, what do you mean by the fruit? I mean the peel itself. The peel of the esrog is very thick, right? Obviously, the fruit, right? But I'm just saying, there's a very thin outer coating that would not be chaser. Only if some of the peel itself is gone. On the first day, we machmir that even a machokas in the Gemara, but we assume even a chisaron of kol shehu. So again, if a person looks like something is gouged out of the esrog, he should take it to be checked. Okay, what else do we have over here? One other issue which is relevant is very dark green esrogim. In principle, an esrog which is green is problematic if it's dark green, unless you know it's going to turn yellow. How do you know it's going to turn yellow? You hope it's going to turn yellow. So if it's starting to get a little bit, it's not very dark, alright, let's say this is not very dark, okay, this already is okay. But sometimes you have a green, a very, very dark green, almost like your shirt, or even darker than some of that green over there. Okay, that would be
okay. Very dark. Lots of
right,
green.
Right.
Lots of green.
What?
Lots of green.
Right. So say many people. So the many people are. It's the kind of thing that a lot of people are lenient on, under the hope that it will turn green. As much as possible, strike at something which has it, which is not very dark green. Okay, they talk about yarok kikarate, right? Like as leak, as dark as a leek. What? I don't really prefer green. As far as the spots, are a little bit less noticeable. But again, and we're talking about really, really dark green. Dark green should preferably try to get something which is not very dark green. What you can do to help that issue, if your esrog is, what?
No.
You want to find it? Let's find it. One of the things that you can do, if you put the esrog in a bag with an apple, okay, that will help. There's something in the apple that helps the esrog. Okay, here's a picture. Okay, you're talking about like a very, very dark green. Okay, it's even darker. Okay, so where exactly the cotton line, I'm not so sure. But you know, if again, as far as what's preferable, it should be something which is not very dark. Okay, here this is less dark. This is already getting a little bit lighter. And as you get more and more towards yellow, that's again more mahudar. But something very, very dark, you know, that I said, some people, many people are lenient about, but one should try to get something which is not so dark. Or if you do, if you buy it a few days before Sukkot, at least put it in a bag with a couple of apples, and that by the time you get to Sukkot, hopefully will at least get it moving on the yellow, in the direction of yellow. Okay? Alright, I think that's... Pitam. We, for many, many years, did not buy an essay of Pitam. I think I risked it a year or two ago. I allowed myself the privilege of buying an essay with the Pitam. The kids get a little bit older. The Pitam, if it falls off as part of natural growth, is fine. Okay, if it breaks off in an unnatural way, especially if part of it is torn out and affects the inside, then it could be possible. Again, usually if you buy an eser with a pitam, watch it carefully. And again, it depends, if it does break, it depends where it breaks. If just the very top breaks off, it's not a problem, but if it breaks down more on the stem, which already begins to open up towards the fruit, then it would be a problem. Most of the sorghum that you buy here do not have pitam. Pitam fell off naturally, and it's usually not a problem, unless sometimes you have a very, you know, it fell from it, actually it's like mamash a crevice into the so there could be a problem even in a pitamless sorghum.
The hechsher will stipulate whether it happened or didn't.
What?
Like, how do you know? I'm saying it's part of the hechsher. Does that state whether?
No, because again, I said the hechsher. Again, unless it's the hechsher, most hechsher, unless you got something where a rav checked this, there's a hechsher on the particular esrog, okay, which is less common. Usually it will be, if it fell off a natural way, the top will be sealed. It won't look like it's broken. If it did not fall off naturally, it will look broken. Something will be open in the so it's more of a kind of a visual.
Chazakah is usually that if it doesn't have a pitam when you buy it, right. Probably fine.
It just said it on the box, so I don't know what to expect here.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
My neighbor had a beautiful throat tree, and he came over and said, "Please have one." And they're big. That's not the issue. Is there any issue going and taking my neighbor's one? You know, do I have to pay for it? Do I have to do anything?
Do you have to pay for it? So I would just, there is an interesting question. This comes up less common for the Esrog, more common for the Aravos. Okay, there are those who say that for a mitzvah to really be meaningful, you should pay for it. Something that you value, right? This is true. If you give services to somebody, if you value someone's services, you want to get someone who's good, you pay for it. Someone who's willing to do work for free, you often begin to wonder how sincere is his work. So it is an idea. Again, make or din, it's not necessary. A person wants to, as long as he lets you have it, you can steal it, you can't do, but as long as he lets you take it, you can have it. Same to the Arabos, the neighbor lets you take, says go ahead freely, you can take it. Al pi Kabbalah, there's an idea that a mitzvah that you've put, lefum tzara agra, the effort that you've put into something makes the mitzvah more meaningful, and if the Kabbalah has this idea that of paying something for it, so it just lets you feel that you've done something, that you've given something, that you've expended something for the mitzvah, and you're not just taking mitzvahs cheap free, but rather you're showing that it's worth something that you value and you consider worthwhile.
The esrog
has to be kosher. So the issue of orla, you have to make sure it's no longer orla.
Yeah.
And two, trumas and maasos have to be taken.
That's
Now,
would you do that?
So that's the issue. So if you have an orchard, so you have many estrogen that you can sell. So what's it? So you take out of you take trumas and maaseh. When you have an individual estrog, you can't slice off 100. If you slice off the 100, you've now. So what you need to do is you can't just go, thank you very much, it's a very important point. You can't just go and cut off individual estrog and then use it, because it's not edible, because you haven't taken trumas and maaseh. You have to, together with the owner, okay, unless you want to, you need to take another esrog which is not going to be used, or just go find you can't get a buyer because the shomerei already taken. You can't remafra shatzan if trus mas already taken. So you can't just go buy a cheap esrog for whatever, a puzzle esrog from someone because they probably took. You'd have to get another esrog off the tree. An esrog which will not be used, and that esrog which will not be used will then be taken as trumas umaisus on the esrogin that you want to use. Now, since you don't want to do that for every person, otherwise you have to pull off every person and have to get two esrogin. The one he's going to use, the one for the trumas umaisus. Let the person who is going to, the owner of the tree, he should take off whatever, 3-4 esrogin, and at once do trumas umaisus on those 4 esrogin, and then you can give him to the 4 negus. So that's an important point, yes. Okay, thank you for raising. Yes, Josh.
Is there, I was buying a srogan and someone said, oh, that's a Sparta esrog, or that's a Tamani esrog. Is there a difference? Can be Yotze with
I don't think the Hasidic ones have another guy. I don't think there's a guy. some have a little gartel around it. Okay, the Hasidic esrog is a little crevice in the middle. The Tamani esrog game is not. There's no real. They like them big. They tend like them big, which means because the esrog will stay on the tree, unlike many other fruit, the esrog will continue to grow from year to year. So you can have a 3-year-old esrog, which is going to look this big. I don't recommend it because the likelihood of having a visible black spot on those, the bigger the esrog, the more area you have to develop spots.
Is there an issue?
It's very
what?
There is a
hidden being bigger, but to a point. But because you don't want to have the hidden of a beautiful humongous esrog, but then find out that your beautiful humongous esrog has one little black spot which is visible on that very large top, and therefore that esrog is possible. So I don't highly recommend taking large esrogim, because again, if you see that the esrog is clean, matov manoi. But a person just has to, a person has to know what's required and what's hidden. Big, yellow, nice shape, okay, those are all hidurim. Okay, a visible black spot is a psul medina. Okay, and therefore to trade a humongous esrog for which may not even be kosher is a person has to be careful about. So you just have to check if you get an esrog from it. A, you have to make sure trumas and maaseh are taken, and B, you have to see that especially if it's big, that in fact it does not have visibly noticeably visible black spots on it.
Last point about payment. When somebody asked about payment before, assuming that you are paying for the esrog, you just have to make sure that you actually pay for it. There's a shaila, if you would mention this, about if you don't pay until after sukkahs, that might be a question. So it's generally recommended, I think, to make sure that you pay before sukkahs. Some people are
fair market price, or
whatever the price, whatever the price is. I'm not talking about your case. I'm just saying in general, somebody that is paying for it.
But try to say someone in the neighborhood.
Say, okay, I'll pay afterwards.
One of the kids, a 16-year-old kid in the neighborhood, is arranging it, and he'll jot you down, or whatever is Yaakov Cohen from Dar es Chaim, and he'll jot you down that you bought with a kaf and kaf, and you owe him 100 shekel, and you say, you'll pay, and you don't get down to paying him till Chol HaMoed. Okay? So there's a preference to pay before Yom Tov to make sure the cash has been given before Yom Tov.
Shoshana
and Ten-year-old boys can be, it depends how it's being. You have to make sure that they are not selling it on their own. Meaning, if they went to the tree and they cut it and they're selling it, it's a problem. Okay? If, on the other hand, they say, no, it was cut by my father, it was cut by my older brother, I'm just manning the stand, okay, and doing nothing more than manning the stand, then that's okay.
Okay.
And if there's just a box in front of the shul that says two shekel, do you, can you assume that it's okay, or do you, if there's nobody there to ask?
We had the shul, I think, a year or two ago.
You should check. You should check, because unfortunately it's not always a, it's usually okay, but there have been one or two occasions where there it has not been. Okay, so it's usually okay. You should just ask. Does anyone know where these are from?
So we, you can't. So you can presume, or you can't presume.
I said. I said you can usually assume, but it's worthwhile to try it. If you can, try to check, because every once in a while there'll be an unusual case. There'll be an unusual case of some very entrepreneuring 10-year-old that decided to go down and cut his own arrows. But usually it's okay.
Scrap.